Okay, and we're back. This is going to be interesting. The 5th of November, today, actually fading rapidly around the globe. It's the 6th, most everywhere else. It's Guy Fawkes Day in the UK. And here to talk to us about that and much more is historian Nick Collerstrom. This is a big issue because we're talking about the concept of patsies. Almost, I guess, the forebear of the false flag operation. Same idea. We can go back a long, long way, but let's go back to the sinking of the Maine in Cuba, in Havana Harbor. Move forward to the lies of FDR about Pearl Harbor and on and on and on. The biggest patsy of our time, of course, most likely, Lee Harvey Oswald, did not shoot John Kennedy. And in England, they have their own. The 7/7/2005 London train bombings, for example, were blamed on four Muslims. But there's a lot more to it than that. So let's find out how our colleague over there, Nick Collerstrom, is doing at the ungodly hour of 4 a.m., I think it is. Nick, are you there?
About 5, Jeff, yeah. Hey, it's a great privilege to be on your program, Jeff, which is greatly respected by progressive thinkers in this country, believe me.
Thank you very much, Nick. I appreciate
anyway,
that.
Anyway, happy November the 5th, yeah.
Yes, indeed. Well, Guy Fawkes, the movie... which I think everybody is kind of keying on now who are tuned in on what you're going to discuss and what the issue is. The movie V was very well received over here.
What a classic, yeah.
It is. Well, it was an instant classic, and it's still watched regularly by people.
Definitely, yeah. It had a tube train primed to blow up, didn't it?
Yep.
And get this, in the months before July the 7th, just months, Warner Brothers were filming that. They were all over the London Underground.
Uh-huh.
Just before that program, and then the launch of it was postponed because July 7th happening.
Well, that's interesting.
Right,
I wasn't aware that the actual filming was folded into that time period.
I think the main photographer of that program, of that film, mysteriously died, and it was released the next year, wasn't it? 2006, somewhat delayed because of the actual happening.
So they held it back,
which was a bit too similar to what they'd had in the film.
Oh, that whole thing smelled to high heavens. We picked it over here very simply for, obviously, another false front operation, false flag, everything too convenient. When did you first get onto this, Nick, that it was the 7/7 bombings over there were obviously contrived?
Yeah. Well, I'm in the London Truth Movement, and I think folks in that group naturally honed in on this and started to discuss it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then later in that year, they started up a July the 7th Truth Movement just focused on that event. And I was part of that group for a while.
Very good.
I think those sort of creative thought went on in those two movements about the subject. And so that's how I got sort of pulled into it. And, right. And my college was just over the road from Tavistock Square, so I knew the whole area quite well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Have you any, since then, any good contacts in any MPs that have expressed interest in your work, or are they like most American politicians,
no.
And they stay far away from it?
One or two MPs will talk about 9/11, and they're just developing a group of MPs who will listen to alternative theories about 9/11. And that is progress, right? That's real progress.
Wow.
But nobody will come anywhere near.
Same old, same old.
I mean, they will recommend, people will ask for a public inquiry into Trump, but it is very simply a public inquiry in order to show how, if British intelligence allegedly had tabs on these four alleged bombers, if they allegedly were following them for years before, how come they didn't anticipate it? And how come they lowered the general terror alert in the month or so before Trump? That is all that they would want from an inquiry, you know.
Well, when you go down the list of people who just happened to be in London at that time, I forget the guy's name.
Benjamin Netanyahu.
Well, yeah.
And your
Mayor of New York, Rudy Giuliani, was there.
Giuliani, absolutely. What the hell was he doing there? Nobody's ever said a word about what he was doing there.
No.
I mean, he was just sitting having breakfast in Liverpool Street Hotel when the bombs went off. Mm-hmm. I mean, was he pressing the buttons or what? I mean, maybe he had a security firm. Possibly his security firm was protecting that big Israeli Taiz conference. It was Tel Aviv.
That's right.
Economic.
Yeah, I remember that now.
The Netanyahu was going to before he was warned. He was warned in advance.
Well, let's go back to Guy Fawkes. Talk about that a bit. Americans, from the film, of course, understand a little bit about it, but is he still a figure in British culture of note to this day?
Oh, totally, yeah. You have
he hasn't faded away, huh? Good.
I think Webster Tarpley's analysis of it sounds spot on to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some years ago there was a report from the War Office dated just days after the gunpowder plot. It turned up, okay,
mm-hmm.
and it showed that the 30 barrels of gunpowder under the British House of Lords wasn't gunpowder. It was something called corn powder, which had decayed. So it was very low grade gunpowder stuff that wouldn't actually have blown up. And I think that is a key. I think that also gives us an analogy with modern sort of fake terror events that are used to scare everybody.
Synthetic terror.
Yeah. And also, as Webster Tarpley brings out, that the nucleus of that gunpowder plot, who were called Catesby and Winter, and some others who'd met the year before, they had come from a failed plot, the rebellion of the Earl of Essex, and so they could all have been executed. In other words, the state or British intelligence had a handle on them, okay, because of stuff they'd been involved in before, so they could in some degree be manipulated. And this chap, Cecil, was the sort of like...
Well, there are always these amazing patsies. The burning of the Reichstag had its patsy. We always have a figure. You mentioned Essex. That's very interesting. There was a major Hollywood film called... doggone it. Essex and the Queen, I think, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Very interesting film. Errol Flynn starred as Essex, and
right. Because they'd been implicated in this, that they could be manipulated to set up this. And what it led to, I see James I, the king at the time, wanted some reconciliation with the Catholics and with the Spanish Empire. There were forces that didn't want this to happen, that wanted war. As a result of the gunpowder plot, that's what happened. There was bitter anti-Catholic feeling. It was because all of the people in the plot were Catholics.
Mm-hmm.
And so it led to, as it were, a century of war against the Catholics. I think it's so important to appreciate these...
it's century
like,
of war.
A screwed-up terror event.
Yeah.
Its aim is war. And his aim is to get people to hate the right enemy. Because British people are deeply conditioned to have an enemy and need an enemy, have to hate the enemy, and feel collectively together, you know, through having that enemy.
How much easier it is to accomplish that now with the mass media. My.
Yes.
Remarkable.
As you know, we get these constructed, if you like, fake terror events in order to ratify and precipitate the war.
Mm-hmm.
I think since 9/11, we all need to focus our minds on this. It's terribly important that we focus our minds on what is still unthinkable for many people. The state can itself participate in constructing an event in which its own citizens die. You mentioned the film V. That is so relevant, and I recommend people watch it, try and focus their mind on this unthinkable thing happening.
British
citizens, they still can't believe that July the 7th, you know, would have been like that.
What is the amount of penetration into the British society that the 7/7 bombings were not as presented? But there was something else there.
I think it's basically amongst the Muslim community. I think you'll get a sizable proportion of British Muslims will appreciate that this is a constructive event, but they're rather nervous of saying so.
Uh-huh.
British Muslims are very intimidated by the whole string of anti-terror legislation we've had since July the 7th, I wish they'd speak out a bit on this. and we could hear more of their views, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, amongst, say, the peace movement, that they won't have it. You'll always get the same sentence, oh, I'm not really into conspiracy theories. And that's the kind of...
Well, you know, it's what I tell people is I'm not, if they even say conspiracy theorist, no, I'm a conspiracy researcher. The world is run by conspiracy. It always has been.
Yeah,
by definition, two people agreeing to do something between themselves is a conspiracy, and that's a fact. At Rents.com, I've put up a couple or three videos that actually were live videos made on September 11th when the bombs went off in the first one tower and then the other, and you hear the explosions of the bombs long after the planes had impacted them, and it's quite obvious. And I'm not sure if you have the same kind of on-the-scene videotape evidence of the 7-7 issues and inconsistencies there, but it's equally as ugly. And we'll be right back with historian Nick Kallerstrom in just a couple of minutes. Guy Fawkes Day on November 5th in the UK. Okay, back with historian Nick Kallerstrom, who is involved with not only the 9/11 truth movement in the UK, but the 7/7 bombing movement to find out the truth as well. I just saw a story the other day I ran about one of the cops involved in the execution murder of that poor Brazilian kid.
Oh, yeah.
Being given a new, very cushy job somewhere. I forget what it was.
Yeah. Well, the Menzies followed swiftly on the July the 7th movement on the 22nd.
How did that Nick figure in your view at this point into the entire?
Well, it sort of was there to confuse people. It seemed to be there to promote the general image of Islamic terror, but it wasn't very directly linked with the July the 7th events. I mean, basically it was a twofold event. You get the four alleged bombers on July the 7th who couldn't really be seen in any witnesses or any photographs of London on that morning, and terrible bombs did really go off. And then 2 weeks later, on the 21st, you had a sort of rerun with four rather clueless patsies there who could be seen, and they didn't really have any bombs. They didn't hurt anybody, but it could be made up to look as if it was some sort of rerun of that. And those were then prosecuted as if they were terrorists, but they were there. I mean, I went to the court hearing. They were there just to make some sort of protest against the Iraq event without actually hurting anybody. So they were there to reinforce. Some are set up to reinforce the public image of the terror event.
I'm
going to come back to what you said before the break, Jeff, about 9/11. I think it's so important to get the analogy and similarity between these two fake events. You in America were told more or less the same day of 9/11, started being told about Bin Laden and about how, and then a day or so later, how it was an Islamic terror event, and you were given the 19 terror within 48 hours, okay? Now, just the same happened with July the 7th. The same day, we had Tony Blair saying, "This we're clear this is a Muslim crime against our civilization," before he could possibly know anything about it, and then swiftly after announcing that no public inquiry would be necessary, and we were fighting the war on terror, and so forth. So we were totally given the agenda. The police were given instructions about what to do, that they weren't there to look for clues in the normal kind of way. And that's the way the whole thing has been constructed, with images implanted into the public mind rather than a police investigation.
So, where did you go to try to seek redress? Did you get media time? Is this all an internet effort over there? Did you actually succeed? Was there the formal investigation and the formal, quote, cover-up that we had to sit through and stomach here? Same thing?
Well, the only investigations were of an extremely limited nature. It was hearing evidence, for example. The Great London Authority heard evidence from a whole lot of survivors, and there's harrowing accounts of the way, in more or less all these testimonies, people got their feet blown off or ankles or legs damaged.
So they played the lurid.
Ignored.
I got it. Yeah, okay.
This was just ignored. The fact that the explosion come up from below and people seeing the floor of the tubes sort of blown up, the steel twisted up as if there'd been something underneath the tubes.
Well, I remember having the fellow on who survived. I think he was on this program, or we had someone who was his relative, and yeah, he described the whole thing.
Was that Daniel Albuquerque?
I think it was one guy in one of the train cars who somehow survived an explosion that came up through the bottom of the floor and described the whole thing.
Oh, right. Might have been Bruce Late.
That's it.
His partner, Crystal. Yeah, they were very eloquent, and nobody could slag them off because the Queen came to visit him in his hospital afterwards, and he very clearly experienced that. And also, him and his partner both described an eerie electrical effect which seemed to travel through the coaches and a strange roar that gradually built up. Don't forget that. I mean, if you go into all the detail of the testimonies, which I do in my book, it doesn't look very much like bombs going off. It's very hard to find anyone at the epicenter of where you think the bomb was who describes something like a bomb. It looks a lot more spread out somehow, and there's lots of accounts of other trains, especially trains going the wrong way, which likewise got zapped. So it's not at all clear what it was that happened or blew up. And that's even similar with the Tavistock, the number 30 bus in Tavistock Square. When you look at the people at the top deck at the back, where the bomb was supposed to have been, you know, they're severely traumatised and they've got their teeth damaged or whatever, and the bus certainly blew apart, but it doesn't sound quite like a bomb blast. So that's one thing which, if we could have a public inquiry, we could really get these testimonies. So just to finish answering your question, the hearing of these testimonies didn't lead to anything. Nobody said, oh, goodness gracious, there's some blast from below, which means that people's feet and legs are being blown off. What could that possibly mean? It was totally preordained that there had to be these Islamic suspects, even though, in fact, nobody saw them, and there's no film, London CCTV, that morning that shows them. I mean, there's terrific media pressure on any survivors to say that they saw them. Okay, they kept me asked.
Yeah. I'm very curious about this sense of some electromagnetic sound or something. It suggests that might have been potentially a triggering device of a remote controlled detonator. Who knows? This is very interesting. I hadn't heard that before. Very interesting.
Yeah.
All right, stand by if you would, Nick. We have to take a break. We'll come right back with more. Just a couple minutes talking with Nick Collerstrom, historian and investigator, a conspiracy researcher from the UK. And we'll continue in just a couple. Six people, I believe that was the number, died on 7/7.
That's right, yeah.
In those bombings, I'll never forget the description of the man in the hospital, just about the train car blowing up from below. Just peeled the floor open like you would a tin can, and I mean,
the terrific violence of whatever it was ripped apart those coaches was not at all concordant with the homemade explosives that it was later claimed that the four guys had brewed up in a bath in Leeds, you see. That was the central weakness in the whole government story, in my view. I mean, in the days after the event, you had real forensic experts who said that this is some military-type explosive, possibly something called C4, which is used by NATO. Then the Leeds story was developed, these lads from Leeds, and then it changed totally. And there's some other explosive called TATP, which... I won't go into it, but it's a totally different explosive. It was alleged they'd brewed that up in the bath with acetone and sulfuric acid and hydrogen peroxide. You remember. And then, at the Kingston trial, 3 years later, which I attended, where three of the pals of these alleged four were on trial for complicity, then the story changed again. And evidently, the lack of interest in basic chemistry of any of these four made the TATP story lack credibility.
Uh-huh.
And they came out with, oh, this is black pepper and hydrogen peroxide. So the alleged explosive use was getting sillier and sillier.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you think black pepper and hydrogen peroxide might do, there's no way it's going to rip apart train coaches, you know.
Nope.
So the question, what did they have in their rucksacks, okay? Some lads definitely did start off from Leeds either that morning or possibly the night before, came up to London...
Uh-huh.
And they had rucksacks. And the question is, was there any kind of explosive in their rucksacks? I mean, I very much doubt
it. Did they have any idea what they were even doing? They probably were paid by someone to do something. One doubts. There's so the levels of this.
Yeah, probably part of a terror drill. I mean,
there was a terror drill going on that very day, was there not?
Absolutely, yeah. And we had Peter Power, the maestro of British terror drills,
I've seen him a couple times on YouTube talking about it, and obviously it's the same thing here. We had terror drills going on the same day on September 11th.
Totally the same thing, yeah. It's totally essential for the public to understand how the terror drill rehearses the event and gets people in the mind of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's like the Panorama program the year before, which exactly followed it, with three bombs going from London Underground in the morning, another one out on the road, and Peter Power was the main spokesman giving the narrative.
Yeah.
Then when the event actually happens, Peter Power, he's on television, and fancy that, he's doing a rehearsal with certain business
clients.
Isn't
that funny?
It's about 5 minutes past nine. He says, 5 minutes after the event, we made the decision to go from practice into real-time operations.
It's just like FEMA showed up in New York on September the 10th, the day before.
I mean, it's the big FEMA vans arriving the night before to help.
It goes on and on and on. You have a new book on this called Terror on the Tube.
By Progressive Press. And I think you'll find it's the one book that gives a comprehensive review of all the evidence you need.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll find it's the one book that really advocates Islamic innocence. Insofar as I say who I think did it, I really say that Muslims are not involved in perpetrating this crime.
Well, we again are left with images of in our memory of dancing Israelis over here, of all kinds of very strange evidence involving Israel, Israeli companies, Israeli people, and so on.
Yeah.
And you have the same kinds of things
there. That is
so
important, isn't it, Jeff? The dancing Israelis go back to Israel, national television.
It's crucial.
Say, somebody had to record the event. That's why they set up their camera to look at the towers before
exactly.
they were hit.
No, exactly.
If I've got one criticism of the great masterpiece of Webster Tarpley, is that he may not sufficiently emphasize this side of things, but... you do get a degree of Mossad involvement in the drug sevens, partly in foreknowledge, I think, and partly in the strange web of security firms that are Israeli-controlled,
mm-hmm.
like Verint Systems, that are doing surveillance, the photographers, CCTV, on the London Underground. But it's quite difficult to tell just how far this goes.
Are there Israeli companies involved with security cams in London? Did their companies...
Yeah.
They were the contractors for some of these cameras?
Verint Systems had a very important role.
See, we have the same thing here. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, Nick, but the highest security link between the White House and the Pentagon was installed by not an American company, apparently no American companies were capable or competent enough, but by an Israeli company. And on top of that, 90% from what I read, 90%+ of all the billing for American cell phone and telecommunications, not done by an American company, apparently they're not competent or capable enough, but done by an Israeli company called Amdocs.
Amdocs, so that's right, yeah.
It goes on and on and on and on.
Yeah, and then Converse Technology,
there you, that was, that's
they were
right.
involved in the, I think, doing the ticket sales at the, on 9/11.
The turnstiles,
right? ICTS Europe, that's another one. That, they're involved both in the 9/11 event at the airport, and also, I think there are slightly shadowy connections with the London July 7th.
Was there any link down the road when that van, the SUV, tried to crash into the airport? Was it Heathrow? I've forgotten which airport it was.
That was up in Glasgow.
Yeah.
That was the day that when Tony Blair kind of resigned and Gordon Brown took over.
Mm-hmm.
There was this sort of dramatic terror event.
It was very weird, very strange
to... As if to give a message to the new Prime Minister that he had to be tough on terror.
Mm.
But we never got much of a story out of that.
Well, what's amazing is that the entire cliched war on terror has been essentially dropped by the Obama administration. You never hear it anymore. It's served its purpose pretty much over here. Because most people, I think, at least reflexively understood that the terrorists... are our government. They're us. And they just didn't buy it anymore, and they milked it for all it was worth and then dropped it. Do you hear the word terror much over there anymore? Not like you did.
Oh, I think so. Yes.
Do you?
I think we're still very much given that.
We're not getting it so much over here.
And I think it's due to it's also connected with the way they're trying to get a new war on against Iran.
Well, they're definitely pushing for that. There's no question. All right, when we come back with Nick, I'll let you all listen to that one-minute videotape done by some New York firefighters in which you can hear the bombs, B-O-M-B-S, the bombs going off in the World Trade Center towers, at least one of them, just a half a block away. It's very interesting to hear. Stand by, back in just a minute with our special guest from the U.K., historian Nick Collerstrom. Okay, and we're back with Nick. Let me play about 30 seconds of this. Now, keep in mind that this video was made after the towers were both impacted, and, well, you'll hear the explosions loud and clear. Well, here we go.
Yeah, here's one of the guys. You can tell you I'm okay, all right? Here, hold on. You want to call your mother or something? Don't worry about me. We need to make calls right now.
So you get the picture. Enormous explosions in these towers brought them down. And
sure,
no,
Jeff, yeah.
No question.
And didn't come down. They turned into white, fine white powdery dust.
Right.
Almost kind of dematerialized in a way.
Well, we've...
totally inconsistent with the impact of
right.
planes.
Nothing to do with that. We've come to the conclusion here, at least I have, that there were probably shaped micro nukes involved, which would have literally vaporized
right.
a great deal of the physical mass of the buildings, which did not
yeah.
measure up when they were on the ground with how much debris should have been there. There was a great deal of missing material.
I think it's a very sensible view, Jeff. Yeah. And if I might just make an analogy, what we said before about July the 7th, that the half-baked, whatever half-baked chemistry the four alleged terrorists were said to be using up in Leeds, that isn't at all consistent with the terrific blasts that happened in London. You know, it's just a weakness or a complete failure of the official narrative in this respect.
Right. Absolutely. So the idea of frightening the public into accepting a draconian, and over here we call them unconstitutional, they're certainly illegal by any moral or God-given standard of liberty and the right to pursue your life as you wish. We also, of course, now are under the aegis of a growing number of anti-free speech pieces of legislation here, which are called anti-hate laws.
Totally, yeah, that's terrible.
Well, it's the end, is what it is. You either have free speech or you don't.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing.
We've had the same in Britain, very analogous, a whole sequence of anti-terror legislation that's supposed to make everyone live in fear. That's what the authorities want.
How big is your organization, Nick, of 9/11 and then the 7/7 group? How many people involved?
Well, it's fairly small enthusiasts, I'd say. If I may perhaps comment on one particular contribution I made, Jeff, it was to the times of the trains. You see, these four lads got the train at Luton, allegedly, down to King's Cross, okay?
Uh-huh.
And the official story was they got the 7:40 train, and also there were said to be CCTVs at Luton and at King's Cross that would show them getting on and off. And I and a colleague, we went up to Luton Station, we interviewed commuters, we got the official log of the trains that day, we did the same for King's Cross, and we demonstrated that there was no 7:40 train that morning, it had been cancelled, and all the other trains were delayed by at least 20 minutes. This totally knocked a hole in the official story, and a minister in the House of Commons had to admit that there was no 7:40 train. But for a whole year, you know, the official report that the public were given kept on saying, oh, there's a 7:40 train. And not only there's a train, but they've got witnesses on that train talking about what the four looked like with their big bulky rucksacks.
Mm-hmm.
So that turned out all to be made up, and there just wasn't a train they could have got on that would have got them there in time.
Now, the bus, Nick, the bus that was blown up, it turned down a street, apparently, it does not usually go down. Is that correct?
Absolutely not. No, that was weirdly diverted.
Yeah.
And it had a bus driver on it who'd never driven it before.
I see.
And the bus driver stops the bus, not at any bus stop at all. It's right in front of, you know, these Israeli companies we're talking about, Israeli security companies.
Wasn't it also near the Tavistock building?
Tavistock building, yeah. Yeah, in Tavistock Square. Stops there, and the bus driver maybe gets down and asks the way. Now, have you ever had a British bus driver get out and ask somebody?
He actually dismounted and left the bus and asked directions?
Well, there's different views about whether he's in the bus or not, but he asks the way, and then he turns around, and he sees his bus blow up. He's clearly a very controlled character who won't give in views to anybody at all, but he's Greek. He gets back to Greece, and he then tells his uncle that he sees, I think it's two or three people dead altogether in that Tavistock Square, and that is quite likely the truth. And that number gradually increases over the next day or two, and it ends up as 13. So that's quite a suspicious event. Photographs of the event, which I analysed in my book, you see about two or three dead people lying around that bus. You don't see a huge number.
Was there any significance in the name? Well, the name, but the numbers 7/7. Are you into that at all?
They like these
numbers.
There is a strong tendency to be tempted with numerology. I think
it is tempting.
You get the Madrid bombing, which I think is very highly analogous. The day before that. In March 2004, and that is 9/11 days after 9/11, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think then there's the Mumbai bombing, which where the date has some significance. So there are some theories that this is chosen in a Kabbalistic manner, but I wouldn't go too much on all that, Jeff. Yeah.
Got it. No. Well, people like
but,
to
but
get...
certainly the 9/11 theme does echo deeply in American events. There's no doubt at all about that. There's a whole lot of things happen on 9/11 involving, I think, the first day of the construction of the Pentagon, isn't it?
Well, the whole inquiry into Rabbi Zakheim and his stewardship of the Pentagon finances and all the missing $2 or $3 trillion, and allegedly all the accountants were working on that and just happened to be in the portion of the Pentagon that was hit, and they all died in the records with them, so they're gone. And of course, the dropping, the demolition of WTC-7 also got rid of an awful lot of documentation and data from a number of different
agencies. Yeah, that was said to be where Giuliani had his control room. If he
correct.
Was controlling the planes flying into the Twin Towers.
It's all despicable. And it is so sad to see the majority of people still going along. They know something's wrong, but they just don't want to stick their neck out. They're afraid.
Yeah, I think your brilliant Senator Cynthia McKinney put some good questions about the Pentagon bomb, didn't she?
Oh, yes.
About how come they chose the one bit of the Pentagon that was virtually unoccupied or mainly only with civilian staff.
She's a very brave and dignified and intelligent woman who I don't know if you know
her.
Oh,
she's a hero. She's a real hero.
Well, she is. She was thrown out.
I get this, Jeff. I was responsible for getting her invited over to England. I had a campaign in the 9/11 group a couple of years back, and we got her to come over, and that was quite a thrill, really.
We could use thousands more Cynthia McKinney's over here. She was drummed out of Congress by Zionist money, which was funneled into her district, and then won her seat again, and then lost it again.
But to hear words of truth spoken by a politician, that
amazing.
Is quite something.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't happen very often.
Well, you've got, I feel so sorry for our friends in your country. You've got the horrible Blair, then you've got Brown, then you've got Miliband, Mandelson, David Cameron. It goes on and on, and these people are all just dupes and agents for the controllers out of the city of
England. Yeah, well, I think we have got, some great, courageous politicians like Tony Benn, but they don't want to go into it, what they call conspiracy theory, which is the manner in which wars are precipitated and generated.
Who's the Scotsman that speaks so eloquently?
George Galloway, wonderful fella.
MP Galloway,
He won't touch anything to do with this, he opposed the war.
No, he brushes it off. I guess he's been told not to go there or something, but there are certain things he will not entertain.
We haven't got politicians ready to be effective yet in seeing the way these events are constructed. I think we need a truth movement that's able to inform them of this, which a while ago seemed unthinkable,
Well, I hope your book does well. I hope it gets distributed well. What we need are some academicians to come forward and stand along with politicians, whether they be current or retired. It doesn't matter. Terror on the Tube is the book. Where is it available, Nick?
It's Progressive Press.
Okay.
Get it from Amazon or whatever.
Okay, so amazon.co.uk?
Yeah.
And certainly Amazon over here as well. What do you hope to accomplish next? What's next on your agenda?
I think just getting a bit more awareness of these things, Jeff.
We have to. All over the free world, what's left of it. I mean, your country is being drowned on several levels, and so is ours.
I think we need to just focus people on the idea that we don't need the war,
No, we don't. And you just lost five or six more. It's despicable. We shouldn't be fighting. War is for insane people, and there are insane people, unfortunately, at the key positions of control right now. Nick, thank you for getting up. It's been a pleasure to meet you and spend time talking with you about this, and best of luck to you.
Likewise, Jeff. Yeah.
Take good care. Nick Kollerstrom, his book is Terror on the Tube, the most important book on the 7/7 bombings, just out over there. Okay, many of the same problems, no matter where you are. We'll be back in 21 hours. Thanks for being here tonight. Talk to you tomorrow night.